Okay, thank you everybody for joining me with StashMyComics.com. We are powered by Geek Energy. We are on podcast number 16. With me as always is Kelly. Kelly, how are you doing today?
I'm awesome. How are you?
I am fantastic. Thank you very much for asking. I'm getting ready to go on vacation.
Where are you going?
I'm going to Michigan, going back home. Taking the wife, taking the kids, going to go sit on a river in dirty sand and not hit this heat wave that's coming down here. But we'll get into that.
It sounds pleasant.
Yeah. We'll get to that just a second. To my right is Matt, our producer for StashMyComics.com. Matt makes sure that everything sounds super cool and awesome for all you listeners out there. Matt, how you doing today?
Best day of my life.
Oh.
I pushed it up on you.
There you go. And I want to say welcome back to Tom. Tom is our writer for Geek Cinema on StashMyComics.com. Tom was out last week, but he's back today. Tom, how you doing?
Hello, America. I still want to say hi to America. So
America says hello. Well,
only America. Not you other countries. Forget about
this. This isn't a global internet.
No.
Not to our brothers and sisters up in Canada. They don't celebrate the 4th of July.
Jeez, all right, political, whatever.
All right, we were talking about this before we started recording. I want to talk about it a little more. Words with Friends, who plays?
I will challenge everyone listening. I will destroy you.
How many games do you have going right now?
About 16.
Are you serious?
Absolutely.
I think I have like 8. And
I like it so much, I bought the pay version.
Oh, wow.
I know, right?
Are you going to be like Alec Baldwin and play it while we're recording, or if you go on an airplane?
I'll definitely play it while we're recording. I will not play it on an airplane. Especially if we talk about a book I don't read, which is many.
Oh, wow. So, you and I are going to have to battle it out on Words with Friends. That's pretty much a given now.
I don't know if it's called a battle when one side is so heavily favored.
That would be me, right?
You keep telling yourself that, Tim.
Even though you're a playwright and you live in New York City and I just read comic books for a living, I think the best that I can do is Tree or Zap or Toxic.
Listen, you play Zap right, you get a lot of points for Zap, my friend.
And you got to get like a triple word score or something like that.
Triple letter, triple word, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, well, here, check this out, guys. Amazing Spider-Man comes out July 3rd. That's not that far away. Are you guys going to go see it?
Yes.
Are you?
Yeah.
No. I write Geek Cinema. I'm not. Yes, I'm going to see it.
Matt, you're being quiet over there. Are you going to go?
I'm going to try, yes. I will not be on the show reviewing it, but I do want to try and see this. I'm hyped about it, to be honest with you.
Now, see, I have some reservations. There was this thing that somebody put together that they took all of the clips and extended views and, you know, the exclusive first looks, put it all together, and made a 25-minute preview of the movie. We'll put the link down below so you guys can check that out if you want to. But I'm really bad about that. Like, when new information comes out, I'll dive at it, and I'll look at it, and I'll freak out about it. But with this, I watched it. It doesn't give away everything. It gives away a little bit of stuff, but it gives away enough of the storyline so you can kind of see how it's going to go. My biggest concern about the movie isn't the plot line. It isn't the relationship between Parker and Gwen Stacy. It isn't even Kirk Connors. It's the suit. The suit is the biggest thing that I have a problem with.
I don't know. I think from what I've seen, the clips of the suit, it's moving so fast and it's so often in shadows, you can't even really tell it's a new design, I think. It does not bother me at all.
I don't like it. I guess I'm, I don't like change when it comes to Spider-Man. Like when Sam Raimi did it, he did the suit justice. Every key part that was supposed to be there was there. he updated the spider on the back of the outfit, which was cool. It looked good. With this one, it doesn't do it for me. I think my brother said it best, that Spider-Man looks like an alien.
It's a little textured, and it's a little too blue, whatever that color of blue is. But other than that, it doesn't bother me enough not to see it or, you know, get excited about it.
Oh, no, I'm going to go. I'm going to spend the $80 for 3D.
Yeah, and I didn't see Avengers in 3D, but I do plan to see this in 3D because it looks like it'll be very cool in 3D. So I'm gonna do that.
And the mirror's edge type parkouring as he runs over the rooftops and flies through New York City and web slings and all that stuff, that really
that was cool.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that looks awesome.
No, that's right. And the one thing the Raimi Spider-Man movies didn't do that I hope this one does is, I hope, and it looks like they do from the trailer, I hope they make Spider-Man funny.
Yeah.
I think it is, yeah. I think they're going more towards that classic wisecracking Spider-Man.
Yeah.
That small knives line, Andrew Garfield improvised that, so.
Small tiny knives, my only weakness.
Yeah.
Well, right on. So I think it's safe to say that we're all pretty excited about it. I mean, there's some reservations there, mainly on my part, but you know, I'm still gonna go see it. I'm still gonna give Marvel their money, and I'm gonna give them $80 and take my kids and have a good time, and then I'm gonna ridicule my children for not enjoying it as much as me.
Yeah, that's really
I'm hoping. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Matt. Go.
I was gonna say I'm hoping that it turns out for people who aren't crazy about the look and the costume, that maybe it turns out to be like the X-Men movie, where you remember when those costumes came out, everybody was just totally ripping on them, and but then everyone went to see the movie. Yeah, it somehow worked. So
yeah, well, all right, we'll leave it at that. Let's jump right into the news, guys.
There's going to be a new Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon.
Well, it's definitely the right move for them.
Update number 8 was released. Record for highest selling comic book of all time. Top secret classified documents.
Okay, so first order of business. This I think is kind of exciting because it's a direction that I didn't honestly see DC going. Barry Sonnenfeld, he's the current director of Men in Black 3. They have commissioned him to helm the Metal Men movie project.
Is that like official or is that rumored?
No, that's official.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, this was a movie? I glossed over this and I was thinking comic for some reason. And I was like, oh, that's cool. But wow, a movie.
Well, here, how about this? When you guys think of Metal Men, what do you think about? I mean.
Nothing. I think about nothing when I think of the Metal Men.
Exactly. Do you know who the Metal Men are? Do you know what it's about?
I do. I like them from a comic standpoint. You got, what? Copper and steel and gold, or I don't know. It's these like four metal characters, and they all are kind of different colors and such. And
you've got gold, iron, lead, mercury, tin, and platinum, and they were all created by by William Magnus. He creates the cyborgs, each made from a distinct chemical element with talents reflecting their places in the periodic table. You know, and it goes even further to give the description, gold is their leader, infinitely stretchable, iron is the strong man, lead is the simpleton protector, mercury is the carpacious risk taker who could meld into the tiniest crevices, and platinum is the only female cyborg who could flatten herself but who couldn't believe she wasn't a real woman. So let's talk about that for a second. Kelly, what do you think about that? I mean, have you ever read any Metal Men comics before?
No, I've never heard of it until now. So.
So this coming out doesn't make one difference or the other?
Yeah, no.
Would you go see it just because it's a comic book movie?
If it looked good, then yeah. I just based off of Barry Sonnenfeld's work so far, I'm kind of have reservations about it. But I looked him up on IMDb, and I was like, he hasn't really done anything substantial.
Okay. Tom, what are your thoughts on this?
It's got Mystery Men written all over it.
I loved Mystery Men. Mystery Men is one of my favorite comic book movies, even though it has next to nothing to do with the comic book. William H. Macy, in my eyes, is the best actor out there. He should be in everything.
Except for Mystery Men.
No, him as the shoveler when he was using the analogy of the egg salad and his team as the egg salad sandwich, that was the best.
So I guess me using that as an insult fell on deaf ears in this case. Okay. what do I think? Look, I've seen the Metal Men in various issues of DC Comics and said, hey, they're those stupid metal guys, and then I've kind of gone on. Did I think the world needed a Thor movie? No, but it was pretty good.
But we're a much better place now because of it.
Sure, sure. Cosmically. Can Metal Men work? I believe any story can work in any format if they tell a good story. But I'm not like, oh, my God, thank God, finally a Metal Men movie.
As long as William H. Macy is Magnus, we'll be all right. I'll go see it if that's the case. Matt, you seem the most excited about this. What do you think about it?
Well, I'm most excited about it because it was the last time I saw them was in Justice League Generation Lost, and that was in 2010. That was one of my favorite books at the time.
All right.
But as a movie, I don't know. I guess they could make it work. Like Tom said, you can make anything work. But I'm wondering why something like a Wonder Woman or something bigger might not be pushed ahead of something like this.
Well, see, my thoughts on this is that if they're going to do this, this should be the start of the DC Cinematic Universe. If they're going to do it, they need to start connecting everything like Marvel did with the Avengers, you know.
Freaking Metal Men, come on.
Why not? That'd be the best place to start, the spot where nobody expects you to start. And they could turn Metal Men around from C-list characters, like they did with Iron Man and Thor, to be your A-list characters, people that are to where people will be genuinely interested and excited about them.
I mean, Why would you start it with a bunch of guys who might be background characters in the Justice League, which I assume is your ultimate goal?
That's a good question, one that I can't answer.
But you put Barry Sonnenfeld, it sounds like this would be more like Men in Black, where it's like, please, everyone forget it was ever a bad comic and come see the movie.
Yeah, but was the world really clamoring for a sequel to Men in Black 2?
No.
No.
Not me.
And I think the box office bore that out, didn't it?
Yeah, they hail it as the movie that toppled the Avengers, but the Avengers had already had its run and made its bajillion dollars in theaters. So
yeah, they were going for like 3 weeks by that point or something.
Yeah, yeah. But okay, so we've got a lot of different opinions about Sonnenfeld's Metal Men project.
Oh. I'll end up saying this. DC can't make a good Superman movie, so they may as well go in the other direction completely.
We'll see with Man of Steel, with Zack Snyder doing that. You don't think that'll be good?
Well, I mean, look, it is not out yet. I can't pass judgment, good or bad, so we'll see. It might be.
I got my fingers crossed for it. I personally liked Superman Returns, but I had problems with it, too. But overall, I liked it. I enjoyed it. I thought it was cute.
Superman versus the giant rock? That was great.
Yeah, that was awesome. Him lifting the rock out of the ocean and tossing it into outer space and then getting shanked by Lex Luthor with a kryptonite knife.
So you've got to check your sarcasm meter. I think it's broken.
If you ask my wife, she'll tell you different. Let's move forward here. This isn't necessarily comic book related, but I thought it was very interesting nonetheless, and I think that this will give some fanboys great dreams until this actually takes place. But on space.com, you can look it up there. It's a reality show on Mars could fund a manned colony by 2023. Now, I'm going to read a little bit of this to you guys, but Just as a recap, a Dutch company aims to land humans on Mars by the year 2023 as the first step toward establishing a permanent colony on the Red Planet. Now, they're calling that project Mars One, and they plan to drop 4 astronauts on Mars by April of 2023. New members of the colony will arrive every 2 years after that, and none of the people that go will ever return to Earth. Now, to pay for all of that, what this company wants to do, they say that it will stage a media spectacular, the likes of which the world has never seen, like an interplanetary reality show similar to Big Brother. Basically, what they'll do is they'll sell advertisement spots on the colony pods and on the astronauts themselves to fund this project, and we, the human race, will get to watch this as it unfolds. Let's get some thoughts on that. Matt, go ahead. What do you think about that?
Oh, wow. I would watch it for sure. I've always had interest in getting to Mars, even though it would cost a ridiculous amount of money. I'm in. I don't want to go, but I'll watch it.
A project like this would obviously cost several billion dollars. I mean, that's not an easy thing to fund. But the thing is that, you know, with NASA pulling the space shuttle out and they're working on their other project to get us back into space, it's left it open to private companies to go up there and do basically whatever they want. I mean, Virgin launched their space rocket that tested well. Other companies are in the process of doing that. Tom, what do you got to say about this?
Could they send the Kardashians?
Don't tempt them.
Wow.
Listen, this is maybe I've watched too much science fiction, but this sounds like, does anyone else think this is going to end in face huggers and chest bursters?
Wouldn't that be great? Well, no, it wouldn't be great if we saw that, but it'd definitely be interesting. It'd
be good TV, that's for sure.
That's right. That's right. Great reality.
This sounds insane. I'll believe it when I see it, but more power to them. Fire away.
Well, see, the thing is that this Dutch company is already going to start choosing candidates next year. So, Kelly, what are your thoughts on this?
I'm just kind of wondering what this reality show aspect is going to entail. Because I'm like, are we just going to be watching these people go throughout their daily lives? Or are they going to, like, force them to, like, compete in, like, stupid, like, tasks in sports games just for our amusement?
Who can bounce from one side of the face on Mars to the other in the quickest amount of time?
Yeah, like stupid things like that. And then they kick people off and they have to go back to Earth.
But see, they can't go back to Earth. They're all stuck on Mars.
If you don't get a rose, you get sucked into the vacuum of space.
Right. Sorry, but you gotta walk out of the air pressure lock without your helmet on. Sorry, yeah. Dude. See you later. But I mean, imagine that for a second. Just imagine if you were chosen to go. You could never come back to Earth. Ever again, you would leave your family, your friends, your favorite dog, your angry cat, and that goldfish that you never feed. You'd leave them behind and go to Mars. I mean, this desolate red planet that is really hot and really cold, and there's nothing there. I mean, what would you do? Like, I know you would have...
If we were, like, forced into it, it's like it's not voluntary. This is not.
I don't think they would force you.
Tom, I think they would force you to go.
They'd be better off.
At least they'd have some culture there then.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. Because I certainly wouldn't bring Watchmen. Jason isn't here. It doesn't have any impact. Never mind. Okay.
That's funny that you said that. Two podcasts ago, we were talking about Alan Moore and that book that he wrote. What was it, Lovely Girls?
Lost Girls.
Lost Girls, that's right. I actually looked that up, and I feel kind of bad for looking that up.
You feel a little dirty, don't you? Yeah,
I do. I mean, it was okay. We're getting off topic here.
We are. We will get to that another day. I promise.
We'll talk about that next week. But okay, final thoughts on this manned colony on Mars. Our president, our government has been promising that for years and years and years. They never come through, as always. But the Dutch, with the funny shoes and everything else that they have over there, they are saying they are going to do it by 2023. Final thoughts on that. Kelly?
I definitely wouldn't go.
But would you watch it?
Maybe.
Maybe?
I don't know. It might scare me.
History in the making, where at any moment we could see him sucked into a vortex or fall in this cavern and never ever see him again?
Yeah, every time I, like, read things about, like, space or see things about space, I'm afraid it's going to be, like, Prometheus or Sunshine or something.
I think I've watched too much Star Trek and Star Wars. Tom, what are your final thoughts on this?
Go Dutch. Well, you know what? We'll end on our like 1,068th episode in 2030, whenever. We'll see how it is. I'll review it.
Matt, final thoughts. I know you said that you'd watch it. I think I'd sit on the couch and watch it with you.
Yeah, it looks exciting to me. And really, what's more cool about it is the fact that the only people that they're going to get to go there are going to have to be pretty darn crazy, especially if you're never coming back.
Nope.
And
they will get a million volunteers. You kidding me?
What did they say? It said it takes 7 minutes for a transmission to go from Earth to Mars. So if anything happened, we would not know it for like 7 minutes and then figure it out.
I mean, I think half the draw of going there is so you can return and be like, oh, I was the first guy on Mars, and then you can live this great life on Earth.
Yeah, but now you're stuck there,
and there's no media, and there's no book deals or movie deals or you know, it's just, I don't know, there's nothing there. So.
Stupid reality show.
Yeah.
That's right, and you'd be a part of this reality show that is unlike anything else in the history of mankind. I'd watch it. I'd get a case of beer and watch it. That'd be for a great time. But okay, we're going to take a break for a second, do a little bit of station identification, if you know what I mean, and we'll come back with some reviews. We've got Ultimate Spider-Man number 1 that we're going to talk about, and we're going to talk about Image's new comic book, Hoax Hunters. We'll be back in just a second.
Hi, Grandpa. Hey, Grandpa, say, have you ever used StashMyComics.com?
Grumble.
I know they didn't have the internet when you were born, Grandpa, 7,000 years ago, but now they do. Thank you. And you should go on an internet, Grandpa, to StashMyComics.com and catalog your comic books. Actually, it's completely free to use. Even all the interactive features, such as the member reviews. Well, I thought you'd never asked. They do have a blog with daily reviews and editorial content, as well as a weekly podcast. Yes, I too will go make a donation to this internet comic book webpage in order to keep the service free. It has suddenly occurred to me that my grandfather is dead, therefore you cannot be him. Do you know where I live?
Okay, now we're at our pull list. This is what we have pulled out of our long box to take a look at and review for you, the listener. Right now we have Hoax Hunters, number 1, new from Image. It's written by Mark Morrissey. I'm going to ruin that name, and he's going to hurt me for it, I know. And
Steve Morrissey or Morikai, I don't know.
Yeah, we'll go with those two. Morikai sounds really cool. We'll go with that. And Steve Steele. Artist is Axel Madelin. Okay, so what Hoax Hunters is about, real quick, is it's this show, like Fact or Faked on Sci-Fi or Paranormal State, stuff like that. They learn about these paranormal events or supernatural events or cryptozoology things, and they go and check them out and prove them as hoaxes, hence the show Hoax Hunters. And you have Reagan, who is the host. She is hotness extraordinaire, doesn't like bugs or icky things. You have Jack, this big brute of a man, and as this story goes on, he knows things that the other people obviously don't. And then you have a side character who I'm going to call the Sam Elliott Sheriff, because he looks like Sam Elliott from Roadhouse.
Yeah.
He's suspicious of everybody. So, and then you have Durand, and we'll get into him in just a minute. And then there is Murder, the astronaut cameraman. And I kid you not, if you haven't read this, when it comes out, you need to read it. Matt, when's this book coming out?
Well, I just read something online here that said that due to a printer error, and this is courtesy of the hoaxhunterscomic.blogspot.com, so there's a delay. It was supposed to come out July 4th. Will be coming out July 11th instead.
Okay, so that's no problem. When everybody's listening to this podcast, you'll have a couple extra days to dig through your couch and get some change and go out and pick it up. Kelly, let's go right into it. What did you think of Hoax Hunters?
I thought it was okay. I like the art. I thought that was good.
Yeah, the art was pretty
I'm not sure if I like the story all that much yet, because they didn't really go too deep into anything right from the get-go, so I don't really know what it's all about yet.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Tom, what did you think about it?
Well, here's the thing. I'm addicted to those shows that it's kind of based on, where people have dark night vision cameras and walk around the dark, and they say, "What was that?" And it was nothing, but it's still your watch anyway. The Ghost Hunters and like Factor Faked and what's the Destination Truth? That's a good one.
Yes.
I love Destination Truth. it's so terrible, but I love it. I get the premise because I watch those shows. And I like the idea that they're pretending to go and debunk these hoaxes when in reality they're covering up the hoaxes. That's kind of a novel concept. I thought the execution felt a little flat, you know. And you have to give, look, that's part of the problem with comics is you really need to give something like at least a good 6 issues before you get a feel on how it's going to execute. And today's market, that's sometimes tough to get because it's all about profit, how much is it making, et cetera, et cetera. So I would feel bad judging the whole thing, especially when it's a concept that I like on one issue. But I thought the execution here was a little flat. The art reminded me kind of Todd Knock's work on Young Justice, except not quite as solid, I thought. It felt a little bit shaky to me. You know, some stuff some pages didn't look as good as others. But like the bottom line is it's got an interesting concept, probably enough for me to read a second issue.
Right on. The concept for me, I enjoyed it. I thought that it was all right. It wasn't the best comic that I had ever read because as I was going through it, I felt like we were coming in on things that we should have known about that they didn't exactly explain, or they did explain in little tidbits. Like with Jack and his dad, who in the book they're investigating this mass animal death, and apparently Jack's dad had something to do with that back in the past. Like he was investigating the same thing, and then he disappeared off the face of the earth. They didn't go into that a whole lot, and I hope that they do. In later issues, but
I'm sure they will. I mean, that's again one of the things that it makes it tough for me to review the story of one issue when it's clearly going to be a several issue arc.
Right. Matt, what did you think of this? What did you think of Hoax Hunters?
Pretty much the same as everybody else here. I like the concept. The execution wasn't as good as I'd hoped for one issue, but you know, this is a trade read for me. Something like this, I would wait until all 6 or whatever collected, and then I would read the trade.
To get the whole story one sitting?
I miss stories, you know, back when, you know, the 70s, 80s, even 90s, they had comics like this where it would be, you know, one and done. Like one story would be about Bigfoot, and one would be about ghosts, and one would be about vampires. And yeah. I almost wish it was something more like that. But, you know, that's things are written for the trade these days. So
I hear that. It felt to me like that they were doing the Hoax Hunters as kind of a front for what they were really doing
yeah.
behind the camera. And that kind of took it away from me. When I started reading it, I was kind of expecting them to be like regular people that were going out to debunk these hoaxes, and then they had to run for their lives for the next 10 pages and then do it again the next issue. I would have enjoyed that. I would have thought that would have been good. But the way that they did it wasn't bad either. It just wasn't what I was expecting it to be.
Now, I want to go off something Matt said that I think I would have enjoyed it more if it was kind of like self-contained issues. Each issue was a different episode or whatnot. It's
right.
Almost like, for me, it's almost like The X-Files, where the strongest episodes to me were always the Monster of the Week episodes, and the mythology ones were just too convoluted, and they didn't seem like they knew where they were going.
Yeah, sometimes you don't have to go that deep.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, what's the name of the comic that's been out for like 2 or 3 years where Bigfoot is a government agent? You know what I'm talking about?
Alpha Flight?
No, not Alpha Flight. Flight.
That's the only Sasquatch character that I know.
I can't remember. I know it exists. I can't remember the name of it. I'll get back to you on that one, guys.
Is it Proof?
Proof. There you go. Thank you.
All right. There we go.
That's Image Comics Proof.
Yeah, that's what I kind of felt like. Is this Proof again? Is this the other side of Proof? Yeah, so it just struck me thematically very similar.
Tom, I am leery of even looking up anything you suggest anymore.
Proof was very well received. I don't know.
Lost Girls or whatever it was. The Alan Moore debauchery.
I didn't suggest that. I said stay away from it.
That's like telling a small child not to stick their finger in a fan. But okay, let's get a final grade on this. Kelly, from 1 to 10, what would you give Hoax Hunters?
Maybe like a 6.
Like a 6, okay.
Yeah. I'm kind of interested in it, but not that much.
Okay. Tom, 1 through 10, what would you give it?
I'll go 6 too, honestly.
6. All right, we're on the fast track. Matt, 1 through 10, what do you think?
I give it a 6.5 just because I love Tim Seeley's art. I love anything he does because I like the hack and slash, and so that's a tiny bit for me.
I'm gonna follow right down the line with you guys and give it a 6. It was a decent start, but not. I'll check out issue 2 and. If issue 2 doesn't grab me, then I wouldn't pick it up.
This guy did Hack and Slash?
The story started out in Hack and Slash.
The art was the same artist?
I don't know about the artist, but I know that the Hoax Hunter story started out as the back-end stories in Hack and Slash.
Okay.
But let's move on.
Oh, you know what? It's not Tim Seeley. Tim Seeley did the cover. The art is by Axel Medevin.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, here was the confusing part. The story is by Morikai and Steve Seeley, not Tim Seeley.
The Axel is meddling in the affairs of Hoax Hunters. Get it? Haha. No, that's a bad joke.
But the art is similar to Tim Seeley. I like the art. So credit to, you know, Axel meddling. Good art.
Right on, right on. I think that was part of the saving grace of the book. But let's move forward. Let's go with... Ultimate Spider-Man number 1. Tom, take it away. Tell me what it's about.
Well, Ultimate Spider-Man is about a teenager named Peter Parker.
Then he dies.
He's bitten by a genetically altered spider and he gains spider powers. I don't know if any of you have ever heard this story.
I have.
That sounds so original.
It does, doesn't it? I need to know more. Tell me more, Tom.
Clearly we're not very timely. We're timely in the sense that Amazing Spider-Man's coming out in theaters to retell yet again the Spider-Man origin story. And we've kind of reached a point where I feel like I've heard the Spider-Man origin story like 12 times in the past 10 years. that said, there's a reason I picked Ultimate Spider-Man. And it's more of a nostalgic reason even than like, hey, I want to point out something boldly artistic about it. Ultimate Spider-Man is the book that got me back into comic books.
Really?
Yeah, I stopped reading comics. Spider-Man was always, it's always been my number one. That's the first book I'll buy and the last book I'll buy in terms of what I'm going to collect. And so it was when I was in junior high, high school, I read comics, bought comics. It was the whole X-Men number one era, the 90s, the Rob Liefeld, the X-Force, all that.
Yeah.
And I slowly started to kind of drop off the wagon. And then where they lost me completely, as they did with a lot of readers, was the Amazing Spider clone.
The Clone Saga. Marvel's Black Stain.
Oof. The less said, the better. But the thing is, I would check in like once a year and pick up a random issue of Amazing, and it would still be terrible. You know what I mean? Until finally, I remember this distinctly. I was reading Entertainment Weekly, and they reviewed the first trade of Ultimate Spider-Man, and they gave it like an A-. I'm like, are you kidding me? So I went out to the comic store, got the first trade, sat down, read it, and I closed it. I'm like, they finally figured out how to write comic books. This is amazing. Because it's like they took the 14-page Amazing Fantasy number 15? 14? I got this wrong. What's the first appearance of Spidey?
Amazing 15.
15, okay. They took that 14-page story and spread it out over six friggin' issues, because as we all know, Ben, this is a bit wordy.
But that's what it needed to be, though. Like,
yes, it is.
With the way that Amazing Fantasy did it back in the past with the 616 Peter Parker, that's how it was all done. Stan Lee was a master of making something out of nothing.
Yeah.
And with the way that his origin was done for Spider-Man, it left it open for somebody like Bendis to take that and expand on that.
Yeah.
And Bendis did. He hit the ground running, especially in this issue. I mean, with the whole origin of how Peter Parker becomes Spider-Man. And what I liked about it was that he updated it for back in 2000 when it came out, the youth of that time. But
yeah.
See, when this first came out, I was with a minority of people that did not want anything to do with the Ultimate Universe.
Okay.
Me and my friends, we were young and stupid, but when the Ultimate Comics came out, we were like, blah, 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 rubble, 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 have nothing to do with it. Anything they need to talk about for Spider-Man, they can say in Amazing or whatever, Spectacular. Why do they need to do this? Why do they need to redo Spider-Man?
And, you know, I could understand people saying that and feeling that way, but ultimately it comes down to the bottom line with any of these, any comic, any movie, any TV, is it telling the story well? Is it engaging? Is it interesting? And it was, and it stayed completely, he did a perfect job, and it's evident in the first issue and the first trade and the first, you know, entire volume to me of updating Spider-Man, but still staying completely 100% true to who the character was and what his world is.
It stayed very true to that. Matt and Kelly, jump in on this. What are your thoughts on Ultimate Spider-Man number one?
I thought it was really good. I was really impressed with it. I love the art. I love how they did the characters. I especially loved Uncle Ben and Aunt May.
Yeah.
I thought they were
Uncle
done
Ben
really
with,
well.
Uncle Ben with the ponytail?
Yeah.
Now, see, Bagley did the artwork for this, too. He was the artist for Amazing Spider-Man, and then he went and did other things and then came on to Ultimate Spider-Man. Matt, what are your thoughts on this?
You know, I enjoyed it. I'm not the most giant Spider-Man fan, especially Peter Parker. I almost like the new Ultimate Spider-Man, Miles, just because it's something fresh and new.
I think something's happening with your audio. I heard you say you like the new Miles Morales Spider-Man. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Nobody else likes him?
No,
I'm kind of Peter Parkered out, you know?
Let me tell you the truth. I have not yet read the Miles Morales Ultimate Spider-Man. And it's not because I'm so opposed to the idea of not having Peter Parker there. It's actually because of this. Ultimate Spider-Man is such... This is so stupid. Ultimate Spider-Man is the only comic I think, whether in trade or in a single issue, that right now I own the entire run of.
Right.
But I've got the hardcover of Death of Ultimate Spider-Man still shrink-wrapped on my shelf. I have not yet read it. Because
I almost cried.
I don't know if I can deal with it. I got to be honest with you. I'll go get the Morales trades.
I just want to put that out there. I almost cried when I read the Death of Spider-Man.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah. And that's what this entire, you know, run did for me. It's the only Ultimate book I think that worked from beginning to end.
And I like that the Ultimate Universe has that option, you know, to make something have a definitive beginning and end and not have to, you know, retread everything. But this, you know, first issue was fine. I liked the little fresh updates they put in. I like Osborn's involvement and, you know,
the creation of Spider-Man.
Right. Yeah. And having, you know, to go back and try to find Peter and, you know, Peter goes to the hospital. It's totally different from what I remembered being the origin, but not so different that it interfered with it at all.
Okay.
And I feel like what Bendis does with these first issues and with this one, specifically with Osborn's involvement in the origin, he really kind of laid the groundwork for what the movies were going to do. And the
Agreed.
And the Spectacular Spider-Man, you know, animated series. And so now Osborn's like always involved in his origin, which never was the case before this, I don't think.
But Osborn always has been Spider-Man's greatest villain, be it Harry or Norman.
Yeah.
And I think that Bendis did it justice here in the Ultimate Universe with Ultimate Spider-Man making the Green Goblin, Norman Osborn, Spider-Man's super thorn, you know, and that took it all the way to the end of the series, too. Like, he never left. Like, he would be gone for a little bit, supposed to be dead, and then come back and ruin Spider-Man's day. I mean, they did good work, and Bendis and Bagley stuck with it, I think, for 113 issues, if I'm not mistaken, like the second longest run for a creative team on comic books next to Stan Lee and Jack Kirby.
Yeah, I think it was one of their goals, I think, was to break that record, and they did. And they broke it, then Bagley left for the period of time. I thought the book was something when Bagley left. I do like Stuart Immonen's art a lot, like a lot.
But it wasn't the same as Bagley. No, Bagley is the definitive Spider-Man artist, in my opinion.
Which we've said, yeah.
Okay, so let's get some final thoughts on this. Kelly, with Ultimate Spider-Man, 1 to 10, what would you give it?
I'd probably give it like a 9 or a 10. I really enjoyed it. I'd go out and buy it as opposed to like downloading it like I did so I could read it.
Funny thing about last week, if you guys were listening, we talked about illegal downloading. Kelly, I just want to say that Jason is now my pusher, and he's given me Miracle Man and No Man's Land. So I'm on your side of the fence now.
Uh-oh.
Tom?
Yeah.
Tom, final thoughts. Ultimate Spider-Man, what did you think?
Clearly, it was practically a biblical experience for me. I'm going to give it an 11.
An 11? Yes. This one goes to 11.
Yes. It was higher than what I gave the Avengers, if you remember.
I do remember. I think I was the only one that gave it an awesome rating, like a 10 or a 15. But
I give it like a 9, dude. Come on.
Matt, 1 through 10, what would you give Ultimate Spider-Man?
I mean, it's pretty much a solid 9 for me. You know, art's great. A story that I pretty much know, but with some nice little tweaks. So, yeah.
Good book.
Okay. Me, personally, I am a huge Spider-Man fan. I tell everybody, if you have no idea what to get me for Christmas or my birthday or Father's Day or just because you love me, get me something Spider-Man. So with this Ultimate Comics, I had reservations at first back when I was younger, but when I got this and read it, I fell in love with it. I mean, automatically it gets a 10 from me. But, okay, we're going to take a break for a second. But before we do, I want to dive into our new segment for the podcast. This is trivia. Trivia questions, quotes, questions from comic books, you name it. This is new. We're going to throw it at you right after the break. StashMyComics.com, powered by Geek Energy. Okay, so this week we are starting a new segment. It's called Trivia. Let me go over some rules real quick. So first off, with the trivia questions, we're going to ask this in the middle of the podcast. So that kind of makes it so you have to listen. Unless you're like some other people and you skip around and go to the middle of the show, which we'll have that marked for you too, but we'll know who you are, and that's very naughty. But number one, you have to be a registered member of Stash My Comics to qualify. If you're listening to this podcast and you are not a registered member of Stash My Comics, you better go do it now so you can take part in this trivia. You're not?
I'm out.
Well, we'll get to that in a second. Number two, whenever you enter your answer, you have to enter it in the comment section of this podcast. Also, in addition to that, you have to put your username on the forums, which is the same as your login name for Stash My Comics. You have to put that right underneath your answer, so that way we can notify you via private message on the forums. Number three, anybody that's an administrator of any form for Stash My Comics or that works directly with the podcast, Tom, is not eligible to play. Sorry, guys. Number four, the first correct answer wins. Once we have a correct answer, it will be noted on the comment section of that podcast, and the winner will be notified via private message, again, on the forums. Finally, if no winner is found before the airing of the next week's podcast, the prize will be forfeit, and we'll move on to the next week's podcast. Now, I do want to let you know that up for grabs this week is 1,000 points for StashMyComics.com. You use those in our giveaways. And also, we have a mystery comic book download code for you. Want to know what it is? Guess the answer to this correctly, and we'll give it to you. Okay, so here is the quote. We need to know where it comes from. And the quote is, must be, that's wrong. Ha, ha, ha. Somebody's got a case of the Mondays. Take a minute to think about that. Tom, if you know what it is, don't say it. Kelly, if you know what it is, don't say it. Matt, you too.
You're really stumping them.
Well, if you know the answer, I've given you the rules. Once again, put the answer in the comment section of this podcast, along with your forum username, which is the same name that you registered with Stash My Comics. First correct answer wins. We'll notify you via private message. We're going to take a break again for a second, let your brains rack around that trivia question, and we're going to jump right into our weekly distraction. Okay, so this week with our weekly distraction, we are going to talk about women in comic books. Matt, this was your idea. Let's go into that a little bit. Now, with women in comic books, if you look at it, going back to the 40s when Wonder Woman came out or any of the other characters that were prominent during that time, the dress and the look of them has always been different than the men. I mean, with the exception of some characters, you know, but mostly the men are covered from neck to feet or even from head to toe, you know, and with the women, a lot more skin is shown. You know, they're put in more of a seductive pose than I guess the men would be. But let's talk about that, Matt. What are your opinions on this? What do you feel about that?
You know, being that I am a male, it's not something that's necessarily ever bothered me. But, you know, as I get older, I think the over-sexualized female characters can get a bit distracting and can take a little bit away from them. I like what they're doing with the newest Captain Marvel. I don't know if you've seen kind of her new look, but
I have.
She went from a very, you know, sexual look, you know, with the black sort of swimsuit thing and the red sash, and they basically, you know, covered her all up, and, you know, they're trying to make her a really important female character, and I'm by no means, you know, some sort of women's lib type person, but I want to see strong female characters that can stand on their own merit and not necessarily have to, you know, reveal everything, through their costume, so to speak.
Right.
But, I mean, women should be athletic. They're heroes. I get that whole thing. Obviously, most of these guys draw women a very certain way, and usually it is, you know, large features and small waist, long legs, and, you know.
I mean, if you look at it, most of the women that are drawn in comic books, in all honesty, I mean, they have large breasts, thin waists, big rear ends, very slim, very slender. It's visually appealing to men and even to women, I guess, when you look at it. Does it have anything to do with the personality of the character? No. But I mean, visually and in all honesty, comic books, Tom, you've even said this, it still has that stigmata of being geared for the adolescent teenager. With images like that, that would definitely draw them in. Kelly, what are your thoughts on this? What do you think about it? You're a female. Tell us what you think.
I mean, the slinkiness of the costumes doesn't bother me as much in terms of, like, demoralizing women or whatever. But it just bothers me that it doesn't seem practical to, like, go into battle, like, wearing barely any clothing.
I think that that's very practical. The less clothing that they have, the least likely they are to lose it.
That is some ass-backward logic I've ever
All right, Tom, chime in with this. What are you?
I want to jump into something Kelly said there. I have a couple of points, and this is one of them. Do you remember, for example, the very controversial New 52 Catwoman number one?
She was
having sex with Batman on a rooftop at the end of the issue, I think.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
And then the start of the issue was her putting on her jumpsuit, and she had like this lazy red lingerie under the jumpsuit. All I could think, reading those opening pages, is there's no way this girl's going out without a sports bra. No way.
These are really uncomfortable.
Don't you think that the leather would lift and separate and make it comfortable?
It should. Sports bras are not comfortable.
Well, no, but it's not about comfort. It's not about comfortableness. It's about practicality, I would think. I mean, she's not, like you said, Kelly, she's not.
If the girls aren't comfortable, then it's not practical.
Okay, practicality. Let's look at that. Look at She-Hulk's costume. Going back to what you were saying, Matt, about Miss Marvel, who is now in the position that she's in now with the full bodysuit, but with what she had before. I mean, her and She-Hulk look basically the same. I mean, they're showing a lot of leg, a lot of arm, and very defining their features. And then you got other characters like Tigra. I mean, she wears basically. Yeah. But look at Wonder Woman. I mean, for a short time, a couple of years ago, she was wearing the pants. They tried to change that. People were up in arms about it, so they put it right back to her in the one-piece strapless swimsuit. To me, in all honesty, I mean, the way they look doesn't bother me because it's all about their presence. And if you want to talk about presence for female characters, the best example is Storm from the X-Men. She, in the 90s, her costume was from neck to feet. I mean, she was covered. She had to be pouring sweat in that thing. But by God, she led the X-Men from peril and disaster and saved countless members' lives and did it looking good.
the bottom line in comics, as in all media, is that sex sells.
It does. It does.
And that's a big part of the reason why the female characters are drawn the way they do, because visual representations of feminine sexuality are something that is profitable for media companies. Look at film, television, whatever. And this is not new news. This goes back to, you know, hieroglyphs, for God's sakes. That's the truth, and that's why these characters are portrayed that way, because it's people don't want to watch a bunch of out-of-shape, covered-up fat people fighting crime.
Well, I don't know about that. I would.
Well, you know, you've got very particular taste, Tim.
Now, tell me that wouldn't be a good comic book to chuck some donuts down a hallway and tell Fatty McGee and Fatty McEdderson to run and get. Am I the only one here?
Well, look at what they did with, Amanda Waller, and that's a prime example of a character from DC that was actually a large woman, and for me it made perfect sense for her to be overweight. Her name was The Wall, and then, you know, with the reboot, suddenly she's, you know, 100 and 30 pounds and looks completely different.
See, now, why the drastic change for that? Is that because her as a character wasn't selling enough, or is that because America as a country is the most obese country on the face of the earth, and they're trying to gravitate away from that? And by doing that, does that work with showing women that are near anorexic or bulimic, but with what could only be implants in their breasts and stuff like that? I mean, it's crazy any way that you look at it. Like, I have a 13-year-old daughter, and I'm very particular about what she watches and what she reads and what she's exposed to. She's 13 years old, and she doesn't need to be exposed to things that are obviously adult. Now, with, like, for example, the scene in Catwoman number one, with Batman and Catwoman having sex, I would obviously have to look at that first. She knows about that. I mean, she's 13. What 13-year-old doesn't know about that? But the point is how tasteful it is, I guess, be it with the portrayal of women and with explicit scenes like that. Any thoughts, Tom? Chime in with that. Kelly? Matt?
Comics aren't for kids anymore. It still has the stigmata being adolescent boys, as we said, but they're just not written for children anymore. That's the God's honest truth of it, as we know. I mean, look at The Boys from last week. You know, that's not for kids, clearly.
No, The Boys, no child should be anywhere near that comic book.
clearly, you know. This is not new. Wonder Woman, for example, is probably the most prominent female character in superhero comics, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Without a doubt, she's the most recognized.
She started as a bondage character.
See, I didn't know that. I didn't know that at all.
The creator of Wonder Woman had a bondage fetish. That's what she is. I'm not kidding. That's why she has the lasso.
And the bracers?
Yeah, but she got tied up every issue.
Yeah.
You're not helping.
Yeah. I know I sound like the world's most sexist man, but that couldn't be further from the truth. I am deeply intimidated by women, so.
My point is the sexualization of female characters is in comic books has gone back to, Jesus, when comic books, as long as comic books have been around, female characters have been over-sexualized. I mean, that's all there is to it.
Matt, go ahead, give me your thoughts.
Yeah, and as long as, you know, the readership stays predominantly male, which it pretty much is, that's how things are going to stay. And that's why, you know, I would like to see, you know, the females who do read comics, you know, sort of vote with their purchases, you know, things that they would like to see more geared towards them. Like with this Captain Marvel, I really hope that this book does well. It's Marvel's attempt at making an important female character with their own title, and we'll see how the numbers play out. But, you know, DC has done a poll, and they've still got a 93% male to 7% female ratio. So,
well, what do you think that the industry as a whole could do to change that? I mean, to get more women to read comic books. I mean, obviously with things like the Avengers in theaters and Thor, all of Marvel's movies, and DC with Batman and Superman, men are going to take their wives, their girlfriends, their sisters, their cousins, who happen to be female, to go see these things. So isn't that exposure enough to get them into comic books?
I would say so, because, I mean, I go on Tumblr, and it's mostly girls on there. At least the people that I'm friends with, and because of, like, all the superhero movies, everyone's downloading comics and, like, reading them and getting into them.
Back to that.
How else are we going to find stuff? We're not going to go out and pay for things. We're all poor.
Oh, none of you have four kids, so I don't want to hear anybody talk about where they are.
Yeah, but we're all lazy and we blog all day at jobs, so.
That's true. That's true. Matt, what do you think? I mean, with
this connection?
No, we're still there, buddy. With the multimedia that comic books is today, I mean, with the movies and the TV shows and stuff like that, wouldn't that be enough to get women into comic books?
Yeah, that's
it should.
that's a better tool for it anyway. I mean, just how many issues does the Avengers sell compared to how many people saw the movie?
Right. They do a poor job of promoting the comics, and I've heard people say this time and time again, when the movie ends, there's your chance. You've still got people sitting there. They're waiting through the credits. Show them some comics. Show them, hey, these exist. You want to continue on, you know, with the adventures of what you just saw? Look, you can buy the comics. And they never do it. And I don't know. I do not know why.
Hmm.
That's a good idea, because a lot of people don't know where to start.
Yeah.
That's true. That's true. And Marvel tried to give them a starting point with Avengers Assemble, the new comic that's out that's in the 616 with the movie lineup of the Avengers. Now, if you want a good comic book with a great female lead in it, one I would recommend is Winter Soldier. Black Widow is in that. I've been talking about Winter Soldier since I started picking it up. But it's a new run with issue 6. Issue 7 is out right now. Black Widow is a strong female lead. I mean, she's not... She's seductive. She's supposed to be. But, you know, she's not showing needless skin or anything like that. And she kicks total ass in these issues.
That's a good point. There's a character, you're talking about a character here who now uses sexuality as part of her arsenal, quite frankly.
Right. Absolutely.
So that's ingrained with the character. It's similar to, I would say, the White Queen in X-Men, who obviously dresses the way she dresses or is drawn to dress the way she dresses. But that's part of, again, sort of her arsenal. As opposed to a character like Witchblade, where it's like, really, that's the armor?
Well, it covers what's important, I guess.
Sure.
Leads enough to the imagination. But yeah, see, sure. While you're looking at Witchblade,
wow,
what's she going to do to you? She's going to slice you into tiny bits with her Witchblade.
Yeah.
So there you go. Seduction.
That makes up for the Bladeism, right?
That's right. Seduction wins again. I know I would lose.
For a number of reasons, sir.
But that's right. And Catwoman, she would be lifting my wallet while I'm asking her out on a date. So, you know. But okay, let's get some final thoughts on this. We're down to the last couple minutes of the podcast. But Kelly, final thoughts. Women in comic books overall, what do you think?
I mean, the costumes, yeah, they're kind of sexy and impractical, but I don't, except for maybe, like, Red Hood and the Outlaws, which is, like, a whole other thing. I don't think, like, women in comic books are portrayed poorly. But
okay.
I will say that, just from my experience, as much as women love strong female characters, I've seen in my friends, we mostly read more about male characters, so.
Tom, what are your thoughts on this?
Hypersexualization exists in comics, both the female and male characters. You know, the male physiques are just as ridiculous as the women's physiques, quite frankly.
The men look like they're on steroids.
Pretty much. But it goes further with the women in that, look, there's strong female characters are exist in comics, absolutely, thank goodness. And it comes down to we have strong writers driving the media these days, as opposed to, say, the 90s when it was almost entirely, to me, an artist's medium. But there are things like Power Girl's Boob Window.
Yes.
the Witchblade, for example. The Invisible Woman's unfortunate disappearing costume from, again, I think the 90s. There are just examples where it's clearly we're going to redesign this character to show more skin so it will sell more books because that is our core audience, guys.
But see, with DC, they took away the boob window on Power Girl, and people got upset about that.
And that's, what does that say about people who got upset about it?
They like boobs.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, it's called the Internet. You can go see them anywhere.
That's sweet. Matt, final thoughts. Final thoughts, Matt. What do you got?
Well, I'm pretty much, you know, in agreement with you guys that, you know, it's nothing that insanely bothers me, but, you know, I like to see some sort of different things coming out of that. Some of my favorite characters are the females, Catwoman, Poison Ivy. I'm really interested in Miss Marvel becoming Captain Marvel. So
yeah.
I think as long, like you said, as they characterize them as strong, and most of the time they do. I mean, what you see and what other people see is just a knee-jerk reaction to their outfits when you open the comic book and you see really what's going on in the story, there's no problems. You know, it's just right. about an outfit, and it's just to sell books and get attention, and boom, they're successful in that because people either are like, oh my gosh, I can't believe what she's wearing, or, you know, they go the opposite way and really enjoy the story. So.
And they give two thumbs up.
Yeah, I'm not even going to say characterize all women in comics as strong, because you can have weak characters, that's fine, but characterize them honestly, you know?
Yeah, but if they're dressed like a trailer park tramp, then...
But if that's who they are in character-wise, that's fine. I'm saying don't have the costume suit the character.
Suit the character, know? That's right. Yeah. Well, okay, we're out of time, guys. I want to thank Kelly, Tom, and Matt for joining me today on the podcast. There goes my phone with Transformers. coolest.
What did it turn into?
Nothing. It turned into a text message, honestly.
It turned into a beeper.
Wow. Okay. So, anyways, we're at the end of our program. Kelly, Tom, Matt, thank you very much for joining me today. As always, Matt is our producer for the show. Make sure that we have the cool-sounding music that floats around while we talk to you, the listener, and make sure that our podcast sounds ultra-cool and amazing. I just want to say before we go, make sure to hit up Zazzle.com/-mycomics. That is Zazzle.com/-mycomics. There you can get your T-shirts, you can get your hats, you can get your bumper stickers. You name it, it's there. It's got our logo on it. It's all powered by you who give us geek energy. We're going to roll out with Jason doing some stuff for us, talking about getting up on Twitter, on Facebook, going to the website. Roll with it, Jason. We'll see you next week with our weekly distraction of our review of The Amazing Spider-Man and more to come. See you guys later.
Bye.
And
bye.
StashMyComics.com is the leading free online interactive comic book database. Catalog your comics and track prices, character, and creator appearances. Follow the daily blog reviews, editorials, and a weekly podcast. Connect with other fans through member reviews and discussion forums. Keep abreast of site updates on Twitter at StashMyComics and find us on Facebook. StashMyComics.com, powered by Geek Energy.
Nailed it.